This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. We bring you an hour of old-time radio every week. Different genres, variety of different shows. We're going to start this week with Vincent Price as the Saint in Real Gone Guy from July 2nd, 1950. Then we'll hear a quick Incredible But True and Film of Death. We'll finish off with Murder at Midnight and a strange little story called Death's Goblet. This one aired July 20th, 1946. But first, it's the Saint.
We delay the start of this program to bring you a special news bulletin. From the NBC newsroom in New York, two fresh columns of North Korean troops have crossed the Han River and are moving southward below Seoul. Two other invader columns have outflanked the town and airstrip of Suwon on the east. And a spokesman at a U.S. advanced headquarters in Korea says the defense situation has definitely worsened in the past 24 hours. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
Templar's Mortuary.
Mr. Simon Templar?
Unfortunately.
Littleton is calling.
What time is it?
At the sound of the... I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to give that information. Littleton is calling.
All right, put him on.
One moment, please. Hello?
Hello?
Is this Simon Templar?
Yes, it is.
Well, my name is Shirley Gray. Please, I need your...
Yes, go on. Hello?
Sammy.
Who are you talking to?
Well, I was just calling you at the theater.
You knew I was with the cops. Hang it up.
All right. Hello? I'm sorry I bothered you. Sammy just got back.
Hello? Hello?
Your party has hung up, sir.
So they have. Thank you. Shirley Gray. Shirley Gray. Oh, of course.
Come inside, Lieutenant Schwartz.
Guess who?
Oh, no. Templar? No, 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 no.
You hate me, don't you?
Templar, this is the Homicide Bureau. I am up to the cleft of my rugged chin in work. I got maniacs confessing to murders that never happened. I got murderers caught in the act who say, who, me? And now I got Templar.
Yes, Lieutenant?
Templar, you got something to say? Say it.
Anyone for badminton?
Templar, I...
Okay, Lieutenant, I just want some information.
Read the newspapers, Templar. They whip up the crime waves. I don't.
Well, then, what do journalism's juvenile delinquents have to say about events in the city of Littleton today?
You don't know?
I couldn't even guess.
Well, stay happy. Go back to bed.
Lieutenant, I'll write a letter to the Times.
Okay, Templar, have it your way. You ever hear of a band leader named Terry Richards?
Of course. You mean the one they call the Real Gone Guy?
I hope to hold your half note, Templar. He's real gone, all right. So gone, he's dead. He was strangled.
Oh? Well, thank you, Lieutenant, for your first exclusive.
Look, if you're figuring to butt in, Templar, I wouldn't.
Now, you know me.
You remember Lieutenant Ruggles?
Old Meathead?
Old Meathead. Yeah. Well, he's now chief of police at Littleton. You'd better stay out of his way.
Well, I wouldn't dream of getting in his way. Or would I?
I'm not kidding, Templar. Terry Richards was a real big name. Ruggles wants this one for himself. You get in his way, he'll have you so deep in the pokey, they'll be feeding you with a pea shooter. Hey, on second thought, is that bad?
Lieutenant.
Yes, Templar.
Did someone spike your bubble gum this morning?
Yes, I... Templar.
Goodbye, pal. Don't sneeze into the breeze.
sir?
I'd like to go backstage, please, Mr. Doorman.
Well, it's possible to get there if your cultural development is at a certain level.
Well, I'm fond of Mondrian.
I collect Americana. I am fond of portraits of those men who have become our presidents. I am especially cheered by portraits of Lincoln, done, of course, on fine paper in black, bordered and shaded in hues and shades of green, which one finds so cool and comforting.
Your taste is admirable. It happens that I, here you are.
Why, perfect specimen. Pass, friend.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Mr. Templar.
You know me? You expected me?
Miss Gray hoped for you. She described you.
Still, it cost me $5.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Miss Gray is in her dressing room. First corridor to your right, and first door to the left.
Oh, thank you. Say, tell me something. Is this the same Shirley Gray who sings ballads so wonderfully?
The same. But she sings them no more. Merle Rooney El Rowdy.
You swallowed something?
A bop. That's what the great Terry Richards played.
Oh, I gather you were not a fan of the late Mr. Richards.
The man who knocked him off was a hero.
I see.
Miss Gray is the only nice person in the band. Take care of her, will you?
You think she needs taking care of?
There's a killer running around, Mr. Templar. Of course, if he's just after another musician, that's all right.
The killer's going to hate you in the morning.
He wouldn't dare. First corridor to your right, first door to the left, Mr. Templar.
You frightened me. You're...
Simon Templar, Secretary Shirley Gray Fan Club, Cell 3, Group 2, currently underground at Twitch Shores.
Oh, Mr. Templar, I'm so glad.
Who is Sammy?
He's... What do you mean?
Well, all the way down here, I've been asking myself, why would Shirley Gray call me? And after calling, why would she hang up just because a man named Sammy entered the room? You see, I'm just the old curious one.
Well, I want you to do one thing for me. Find out who killed Terry Richards.
Now, that's a job for the police, isn't it?
Well, they might get the wrong person.
Sammy, for instance?
Well, they might not find out in time. Somebody else might get killed.
The doorman seems to have had the same thought. What brings it on?
Well, no one knows why Terry was killed. Nobody liked him, but nobody hated him enough to kill him. This is almost the work of a maniac. There was no reason for it.
You mean no one was ambitious, jealous, frustrated?
Oh, don't talk like that.
You're hiding something from Simon.
Please don't joke. I found Terry's body. I called the police, and they said he must have been strangled with a stout, thin cord, but...
Well?
Well, they're wrong about it and about everything else. He was strangled with a...
What's this? Another cop?
Oh, Sammy, this is Simon Templar, the saint. Simon,
I told you to let it alone, Shirley. Get out, Templar.
I'm happy to know you too, friendly one.
Look, Templar, we're being held in this offbeat burg, and we can't get out. I'm spending all my time at the jail answering the silly questions of these cornball cops... And now you. I've got rehearsals to do. Now, will you get out?
Oh, no, Sammy. No, not rehearsals already. Why, Terry hasn't even been...
Yes, Sammy. Why are you so anxious to get in rehearsal?
We've got a contract for a concert tour. That's what we were doing in this corn palace, warming up for the tour. The band's got to be in shape in a week or the contract is canceled. No contract, no tour. No tour, no band. No band. We're in a panic, you see?
No. Just where do you fit in?
I like money. I eat it.
It's cheaper than food these days.
Besides, if we make out, the agency is giving me the band. I got it coming. Just like Terry had what happened coming to him.
Oh, Sammy.
Well, Terry was a slob and you know it.
You are a man of grace and charm, Sammy.
Send him away, Shirley. Get him out of here.
Gentle psychotic, isn't he? As we jazz lovers say, this routine is murder.
Oh, I'll talk to him. Will you wait for me, Simon?
Need you ask?
May I come in, Mr. Templar?
Of course. Say, how did you know me?
Oh, I talked Shirley into calling you. My name's Dick Carver.
Oh. You're with the band?
All I do is beat these lousy drums. You ever hear that joke?
Yeah, to the point of nausea. Who killed Terry Richards?
I don't know. The cops thought Shirley might have because she found him, but it wasn't Shirley. I had her call you so you could prove it was someone else.
Well, what was she doing in his dressing room? Was it her habit to go there? Look, Carver, dear boy, if you want me to help
you... Okay, okay. Lay out for four bars and I'll give you the score. I understood Terry Richards. I didn't like him any more than anybody else, but I did understand him. I've been with him since the year one. Sammy has, too, only he played a 3-year job with the Army.
Sammy called Terry a slob.
Yeah. Before the war, Sammy and Terry started this band. Terry funded it, Sammy arranged and conducted rehearsals. The man sent him greetings, and he went into the paratroops and came back tough and hard. I thought he'd kill Terry when he found out Terry had cut in for 100% of the band. I remember his hands were just aching.
Why did he come back with Terry?
Terry was up here, Mac. Number one. He was willing to pay for Sammy's talent and pay good. That's the only way he could keep anybody, including Shirley. Poor kid. It wasn't enough she had to work for him. She had to go along with him a little way if she wanted her job. And she did.
Why? Why, she used to be the biggest name on radio without Terry Richards. How did she ever become a band singer?
Oh, canaries are hard to figure. Maybe that's the question you've got to answer.
This Terry Richards seems to have been a dismal kind of snail.
Well, I admired him, Mr. Templer, for one reason. He knew how to compete. Fight, cheat, steal, hit below the belt, but stay on top. He had one philosophy, and it fit this world great. Hooray for me, and nuts to you. If I could have had that, I'd have done all right. I'd have been bigger than Terry Richards. But I haven't got it. I admired the man who had it.
Well, this has been an enchanting recital of the foibles of humanity, but who killed Terry Richards?
I wish you'd find out.
Why are you so anxious, dear?
Because without Terry, this band can still go places. Oh, we needed him like the Met needs Carmen Lombardo. Now, Sammy will be in charge, don't you see? And he'll give everybody a chance, even me.
What do you mean?
But Terry wouldn't give any of us a chance to shine. We always had to feature his guitar. But we got a real gone arrangement of Temptation. Just me on timps and Shirley on voice. Real gone, real gone. But Terry wouldn't even listen.
What I've heard of progressive music as a sample, I'd say it hasn't gone quite far enough. It's still in the range of hearing.
Come on, Mr. Templer. But Shirley.
Come on, let's go.
This way, the green room. Good heavens, Shirley.
Out of the way. Call the cops. Hurry.
Oh, Mr. Templer.
Are you all right, Simon?
Oh, yes, Angel. I'll be all right. Hey, I thought you were dead.
She just fainted, Templer.
Did you call the police, Dick?
Between giving her smelling salts and bathing your head, I haven't had much of a chance.
What, as they say in the whodunit, happened?
Well, somebody slugged you from behind and pushed me through the door and slammed it.
Oh, my neck. Oof, there must have been a rabbit punch.
Do you want a doctor, Simon?
Dear heart, I want an answer. By the way, what did happen to you?
Well, I argued with Sammy for a while, and then I came over here, and I picked up Sammy's baton and... this was wrapped around it.
Wait till I stand up. Oh, that floor was so comfortable. Hey, what is this thing?
It's an E string from a guitar.
It's what was used to kill Terry.
Probably from his own guitar.
Probably someone had a sense of poetic justice, a guitar string for a guitarist. Let me see that thing. Ow!
What's the matter?
I pulled it tight. It cut into my hands. Hey, wait a minute. Did you know Terry was killed with an E string, Shirley?
Well, it was beside him when I found him. Between the time I called the police and the time they got here, someone had taken it.
Shirley, my sweet, Emily Post has it that when one is in possession of evidence or information about evidence, one tells the cops or one suffers, one does.
Well, I was afraid.
But you see, you are more afraid now. This thing is a warning for Sammy, for you, or for everybody. Hey, by the way, where is Sammy? Why didn't he come running when he heard you scream?
Same reason I knew she was in the green room and not his dressing room. His room is soundproof.
Well, I move that we adjourn to Sammy's little cell and see.
No.
Shirley, you're not going to be stubborn.
All right, let's go.
Something tells me we've got to break it down.
Oh, Sammy!
The E string again.
All right, Dick, now.
The cops?
The cops.
But
we'll take care of Sammy, I hope.
Mr. Templer, I have answered the questions of the police. I have answered the questions of my wife. Now you want me to answer your question.
My friend, as doorman of this house of culture, you are in a most enviable position. You see who goes and who comes. Now, let me review the bidding. The famous Terry Richards...
the infamous Terry Richards?
Nonetheless, he was killed. A bumbling, murderous toad came within a minute of killing Sammy today. The same wart-brained idiot delivered a rabbit punch to my neck. I only want to be sure it was no outside force. Do you follow me?
As the animal act follows the acrobats, Mr. Templer. But I must repeat, no insidious force has come through these portals. Unless that force be you... and you should hear Chief Ruggles on the subject of you. Police.
You don't like the police?
Mr. Templer, the police were put on this earth for one reason. So that so-called musicians could arise in the morning with the assurance that somewhere on earth there was someone lower on the scale of human beings.
You could be censored for that. Tell me, are you here all the time?
Mr. Templer, there are matters one does not discuss with just any stranger.
Oh? Oh. Oh, touche, I'm sure. I simply want to learn who could be a murderer. That's all. It's a simple one. Some people want food. I want a murderer. Some people want a new apartment. I want a sneaky, soft-pedaled thug who could walk so softly he would be unheard. And who would slug me from behind.
Even I could do that, Mr. Templar. I wear sneakers. They're relaxing. I could come upon you so quietly.
Oh, you could. I'll give it thought. Thank you so very much.
It was nothing, Mr. Templar.
I know. Nothing. Are you feeling better, Sammy?
Templar, are you still around?
You're not happy with me, Sammy.
Sammy, please. If it weren't for Mr. Templar, you might be dead.
Oh. If he hadn't shown up, it wouldn't have happened. He got a hold of something and scared somebody, that's all.
Whom did I frighten, Sammy? You?
What do you mean?
It occurs to me that if I were a person so willed and so frightened, I could hold a wire about my neck and induce unconsciousness.
You've got rocks in your head, Templar. Why don't you leave it alone? Let the cops
have it. Because somebody slugged me, Sammy, and I'm very sensitive about such things.
Why don't you two stop fighting? This is serious. Somebody else is going to get hurt.
Yes, and I hereby nominate Simon Templar.
I must decline because of the press of business. Look, instead of us arguing like this, why don't you go rehearse?
Oh, great. Now he's going to run the band, too.
No, but at least you'll be out of my hair for a while.
Oh, you...
Sammy has an abrupt personality. Well, Shirley, we're alone.
Simon, are you getting anywhere?
The answer to that would have to come from your own lovely lips. You're very sweet, Shirley. To see you as you are now, as they say in the soap operas, it does something to me, dear.
Well, suppose whoever it is gets away with it. Suppose he succeeds next time, kills Sammy or me.
Tell me, Shirley, did you kill Terry?
What did you say?
I said, did you kill Terry and try to kill Sammy?
Simon!
I'm very rude, my analyst tells me. Oh, never mind my analyst, I hate him. You didn't answer my question.
No, I didn't kill Terry. You satisfied?
Eminently. Tell me something, Shirley. A couple of years ago, you were going great guns as a soloist. I remember reading something about a big recording contract. I had your recording of April in Paris. It was one of the best things I ever heard.
I'm still getting royalties on it.
How is it that you came to work with a band? What happened that you gave up your contracts and your big career? Why do you stay with this band?
Is my career pertinent?
I don't know. But I do know that we're going to have this cleared up very soon.
Oh, do you really think so?
Mm-hmm. I've got something right on the tip of my mind. Can't quite get hold of it, but I will. And if we can clear it up in time and Sammy has the band in shape, you'll be hitting the road. So you'd better be in shape.
But I...
Why don't you go to your dressing now and rest, huh? Go on. It'll do you good.
Well, all right. If you say so.
I'll walk with you. Is that idea of Dick's about temptation going to work out, really?
I don't know, Simon. I'm not too crazy about it, but maybe it will. I hope so, for Dick's sake.
Dick's sake?
Yes. You know, every time Sammy wrote an arrangement so Dick would have some breaks, Terry would insist that it be rewritten for his guitar. And poor Dick would just sit up and keep a rhythm. As he said, all he does is play those lousy drums.
Yes, it might be a break for Dick at that. He's a nice fella. He's got something coming, I should suppose.
Well... This is where I drop off. What are you going to do?
Oh, I don't know. Catch a murderer, maybe? Hello, Dick.
Oh, hello, Mr. Templar.
Oh, no, don't stop playing. Go right ahead, Dick.
Oh, I was just passing the time of day. You having any luck?
Well, I'm about to step out of the store window and call for Philip Marlowe.
Well, if there's anything I can do, or any of the fellas for that matter, I know they'll help.
I thought they were all happy to see your late maestro go. That was the impression I had.
Now, Sammy might give you that impression, or that whacked-up doorkeeper out there. But I don't think anybody likes to see somebody murdered, especially when they know the killer is still on the loose.
But you fellas seem to be taking it in stride.
Some people, yes, some people, no. Me, I'm worried.
Oh, take it easy now. Hey, you certainly need a lot of paraphernalia in your trade.
Yeah. Cymbals, chimps, bongo, tambourine.
What are these things?
These? These are clays.
What are they for?
Set a rhythm for the Latin American stuff. Here, let me show you. See? Very simple.
Yes, indeed. Very simple. Yeah, this is quite an array of stuff for one who just beats the drum.
That's all I do. Beat these lousy drums.
Well, I have to do some more snooping, Dick. I'll see you around.
Okay, Mr. Templer.
Lousy drum.
Busting in here.
Sammy, I've got two questions for you if you're interested in finding Terry Richards' killer.
I'm not.
Number one, you were in the paratroops?
Yes, I was in the paratroops.
Number two, did you make patrols behind the lines where you had to kill a man with your own hands?
You scum.
I asked you a question, did you?
That's my answer. Now get out of here. And if I set eyes on you again, I'll...
Kill me, Sammy?
Get out!
I think I'd feel much better if you'd take my head in your lap and bathe my face. I'd feel much better.
Oh, Simon, stop it. You know, you shouldn't have just barged in on Sammy like that. He has a temper and he doesn't like to be reminded of... Well, you just should have been more diplomatic.
I was. Diplomacy, my dear girl, is not always a matter of kid gloves.
Oh, Simon, why don't you give it up? I'm awfully sorry I got you into this.
Well, I'm not at all. It's well worth everything just to sit here and have your sympathy and... Shirley.
Simon, what's the matter?
That dress for him. Round the neck of it. An E string.
Oh, Simon,
never
who would...
Never mind, Shirley. I think I know what it means now, all of it.
But why me? Do I know something? What is it?
No, you don't know anything, but you've done something. Yes, it figures.
Oh, Simon...
Now, don't cry, Shirley. Tell me, did Sammy get someone to take Terry's place with the guitar?
No.
Good. First, we'll take care of that for him.
But
Second, you're going to make sure the public address system is warmed up in the wings so I can use it. And third, you're going to tell Sammy and Dick you want to run through temptation.
Oh, no, Simon, I couldn't.
Make like that tired old gag, you know, the show must go on. It's one of the most important things in your life. And I want you to do just as I say, or I'm afraid you're not going to have a life to have important things happen in.
Okay, let's take it once and then forget it. No count. It's up to you, Dick. Take it in the downbeat.
You ready, Maestro?
Yeah.
Okay, now, remember what you're to do.
Ready, Shirley?
Yeah, Sammy.
Dick, roll it.
You came. I was alone. I should have known. Temptation. You smile, luring me on. My heart was gone. You were temptation.
Okay, Maestro, it's yours. Your killing days are over, son. All over.
Simon!
What are you trying to do, Temple? You trying to louse up the whole band?
The music you play hasn't loused up your band. How could I possibly do it? Simon will clip you.
Dick, how could it... I don't understand.
We understand, don't we, Dick?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Sammy, if you will call the cops, I'll tell Dick a little story about a man who was very ambitious, who wanted to be big and important like Terry Richards, who didn't want anybody to get in the way of his ambitions, who admired selfishness and ruthlessness. That's about the story we'll tell, isn't it, Dick?
All I do is beat these lousy drums. All I do is beat these lousy drums.
But why did he try to kill me, Simon?
Why, dear, just remain as you are. Isn't this romantic?
Simon... You should know that...
Oh, I do know. He killed Terry because, as you said, Terry took all the licks. Is that what you say? That Dick thought belonged to him. Then he got real ambitious. He wanted to be like Krupa, have his own band, and he tried to kill Sammy. Oh. Then he could fight for the leadership of a band that was already great.
Oh, it's so awful.
Dear heart and gentle woman, it's so wonderful.
Simon.
I mean meeting you.
Oh, but when did you first suspect?
That you were wonderful.
No, that Dick was the killer.
I was puzzled that someone had used a guitar string for the purpose of strangling Terry Richards. It cuts into the hands, and there's no purchase unless it's wound around the hands, and that gives no wire for strangulation. Then I came across the clavis and Dick's drum, and everything fell into place.
I see. You know, I remember when Sammy got back from the army and we had a party, and he got drunk and told us how they used to kill the enemy with wire, the ends of which were tied to batons to give them, what did you say, purchase?
Sure. You're making Simon sound anticlimactic, and that's not in the contract.
Oh, I'm sorry, Simon. You really did a good job, but...
Now, just stay as you are, dear.
Oh, Simon.
Well, in any event, Dick remembered Sammy's tales of the paratroops. He tied the ends of the guitar strings to the clavis he used for Latin American rhythms. And then he approached his victims from the rear, looped the wire over their heads and curtains.
Ooh, how terrible.
It was very clever. When you screamed and fainted and we came to you, he stepped behind me and slugged me. Then he ran to make his pass at killing Sammy. He wasn't clever enough to take his time and make it thorough.
Oh, I think it's so gruesome.
I think it's wonderful.
Oh, Simon, you can.
But I do. The more I explain, the more you shiver, and the more you shiver, the closer you come. And it's wonderful.
Will you please listen to me for a moment?
No, dear, you're upset. You'll be going back to the city now. You know, I think that monster Chief Ruggles will release all of you. Why don't you have dinner at my place? Just you and me. You'll like my place. I have a fine collection of modern art, especially Picasso.
You're inviting me to come up and see your Picasso?
My dear, when one as charming as you comes to my place, it's not to see the Picassos, but the handwriting on the wall.
What are you doing with my wife, Templar?
You're...
My wife.
Oh, how depressing.
Simon, that's what I've been trying to tell you. You asked why I stayed with this band and gave up my other career. Well, it's because Sammy and I have been secretly married for 6 months.
Oh, no.
Well, that's why I called you. I was afraid when the police found out, they'd think that Sammy killed Terry because of jealousy.
I would still like to know, Templar, what you were doing with your arm around my wife.
I... I was consoling her.
I've got some consolation for you.
Sammy, I wouldn't advise violence. I'm ready this time.
Violence? You've got me all wrong.
Chief! Chief Ruggles,
Sammy.
Now, what do you want?
You still looking for Templar?
What else?
Here he is.
Oh, no.
Templar.
Hello, Chief.
I want to talk to you.
Say goodbye to the nice man, Shirley.
Goodbye, Simon. And thanks.
Adieu, my sweet. We'll meet again.
Over my dead body.
I'll try to arrange it.
I've been listening to another adventure of the Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now here's our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, in tonight's cast, you heard Vivi Janis, Larry Dobkin, Lou Merrill, Jack Edwards, and Bill Johnstone. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
Based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Safier production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen in the Universal International picture Curtain Call at Cactus Creek. And all you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer is Don Stanley. Next, it's Sam Spade, then Summer Symphony on NBC.
The nature of death and the fate of the human soul after death are riddles to which no man has found a key. But there have been a few restless men who have made investigations in the field, and while they have not learned the answers, their inquiries have borne startling fruit.
In April of 1907, the prominent French physician and neurologist, Dr. Henri Baraduc, suffered an unfortunate loss. His son, André-Joseph Baraduc, died at the age of 17. On the day after the funeral, Monsieur Charles Vinault, a close friend of the family, came to pay his respects.
I know how futile words are at a time like this.
It was kind of you to come, Charles.
You were with André when he died, Marie.
Oh, Charles.
Why, my dear, I am sorry. It was a stupid question.
No, it was not stupid at all. Charles, I was not with André when he died. Henri would not let me be.
What?
He kept me out of the room. During the last few hours, he was in there alone with André. You see, when André went in for the last time, he took a camera with him.
When Charles Vino saw Marie several months later, he realized that she was a very sick woman. And a month later, Vino received word that her condition was critical. He went at once to the Beriduc house.
I'd rather you wouldn't come in, Vino. Marie is dying.
Good Lord. I want to speak to her, Henri.
I asked you not to come in.
Yes, I know.
You have the decency to permit me to be alone with my wife at the moment of her death.
Why, Henri? For the same reason that you wanted to be alone with your son? Are you perhaps planning to set up your camera near the deathbed?
Oh, you know about that, do you? Well, yes, since you inquire. Yes, that's exactly what I'm planning.
The following day, the newspapers carried the report of the death of Madame Marie Baraduc. Charles Vino returned to the Baraduc home. He bluntly denounced the doctor as a heartless and inhuman monster.
I'm a scientist, Vino. I wanted a visual record of what happens to the body at the moment of death.
And then he handed his friend a series of pictures, explaining that he had used specially sensitized plates. Vino stared at them in amazement and disbelief.
Mon Dieu! It looks like a sort of misty ball rising from her body.
And so it is. If you look here, you'll notice that three such balls appeared. They coalesced into a single globe. It remained attached to the body by a cord, a luminous cord. And then, at this point, the cord broke and the globe floated away. I may be an inhuman monster, Charles, but I think you'll agree that I've made a rather significant discovery.
Charles Vino may have agreed, but the world did not. Dr. Baraduc's astonishing pictures have been published frequently, but science has refused to take them seriously. Is it because the circumstances under which they were made are so repugnant, so offensive to human decency, that the doctor's integrity is subject to suspicion? Or is it simply because the photographs themselves tell a story that is too disturbing? A story incredible but true.
Common criminal, and I didn't mean it. You know I didn't.
Oh, stop whining, Gerald. Take your medicine like a man.
What? All right, Harvey. I'll stop. You're responsible for the whole thing. You know you are. And since they can only hang me once, even for two murders...
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Death's Goblet. Midnight. Tales of Mystery and Terror by Radio's Masters of the Macabre. Our story by Sigmund Miller is Death's Goblet.
It all began at one of Arthur Cunningham's parties. He always gave a party when he came back from one of his trips abroad. I went there with Gerald, my partner, and his wife, Susan. Beautiful Susan. Did I care for her? People used to say so. But she was too self-centered a woman for me. Now, I like to look at her just as I like to look at anything that's lovely. That was all. As for Gerald, well, he was rich, which was the only reason he was my partner. But suppose I start at the beginning. At the moment we got to the party and Arthur came over.
Well,
Well, hello, Harvey. Glad you came.
Wonderful to see you back, Arthur. You know Gerald and his lovely wife, Susan.
Of course. Hello, lovely wife, Gerald.
It's nice to see you again, Arthur.
Good trip, Arthur?
Marvelous. And you're just in time for a drink. Let's get away from this mob. Come into the study. I just opened my last bottle of Chateau Albert.
Oh, nice.
Here we are. Oh, well, someone get the glasses out of the cabinet, will you?
Marge
parties make me very nervous. I'm much traveling.
Here we are.
Yes.
Hi. What an odd goblet this one is.
Oh, put that one back, Susan.
Why, what's wrong, Arthur?
Use any of the others, but not that one.
Oh, I'll be careful of it, if that's what you're worried about.
Well, it's not that. I just don't want you to drink from it.
What's all the mystery about, Arthur?
Well, you'd all think I was mad if I told you. Take a look at it.
It's a very strange-looking glass.
Yes, looks Venetian, possibly from Murano.
It is.
This red spot here on the side.
Yes, it's supposed to be a drop of blood.
Oh, that's very odd. How do you know that?
Well, Gerald, this goblet has a legend, a terrible legend. And of course, none of you will believe it, but the story is that anyone who drinks from this goblet will kill someone.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you believe it?
Why, yes, Gerald. You see, I've had proof.
Good heavens.
I once drank from this goblet.
What?
Arthur, you're joking. You mean that
Yes,
you...
Susan, it was justifiable homicide, but after I drank from it, I did kill someone. He was a thief and he attacked me, but still I killed him.
Well, you never told us about that.
And it's not anything that I care to remember particularly.
Oh, how terrible for you, Arthur. Where did you get the goblet?
From a murderer. A man who killed his wife. They were auctioning off his estate.
Hmm. Extraordinary. May I look at the glass, Arthur?
Yes, if you like.
Everyone stared at the goblet in silence as I held it to the light. It had a delicate brown tint, reminding me of old blood, except that it sparkled and glittered. The spot of red did look like a drop of blood about to roll down the side. It seemed ridiculous that this inanimate object could make men commit murder, and yet there was something about it that fascinated me, and suddenly I wanted to drink out of it.
You seem very interested in my goblet, Harvey.
Yes, will you pour some wine in it for me?
What? No, Harvey. This happens to be one superstition I believe. Everyone who has ever put his lips to this goblet has killed. I don't know why it's so, but it is.
Oh, it's silly, of course, but why tempt fate?
Oh, nonsense, Gerald, nonsense. I'm going to drink out of it.
You'll have to pour the wine yourself, Harvey.
All right, I will. Well, here's, health and long life.
No, Harvey, I won't let you.
Oh, why, Susan, you shouldn't have done that. You've spilled some of Arthur's best burgundy and ruined a good tablecloth.
Well, it doesn't matter. I'm glad you did it, Susan.
I won't let you or anyone else drink from that glass.
It's strange to get so distressed about a ridiculous legend.
I don't think murder is ridiculous.
You know, I'd like to get rid of it. I was thinking of destroying it.
Well, why don't you just fling it against the fireplace?
No, I can't.
Huh?
I've tried several times, but somehow I couldn't.
Arthur?
Yes?
How about giving it to me?
I'd rather not.
Oh, come on. You want to get rid of it, and I have a fine glass collection. I'd like to add to it. I'll keep it locked up.
You'll be sorry, but if you want it that badly, Harvey, it's yours.
Arthur, please don't give it to him.
Susan, what's the matter with you? You watch over Harvey as if... Well, as if...
As if what, Gerald?
Oh, the whole business is absurd.
Of course it is.
Yes, and if I should drink out of it and commit a murder, that would be the most absurd thing of all. I kept the goblet on the mantelpiece in my library where the lamplight made it glitter. I discovered that the red drop was not paint. It was ingrained in the glass. Oh, very cleverly. One night, both Susan and Gerald were at my home. As we chatted, I got up, went to the mantelpiece, and idly toyed with the goblet.
That goblet? It's the one Arthur
gave... Yes, yes, you remember. He gave it to me.
Why don't you smash it, Harvey? Get rid of it. Ooh, it gives us all the creeps.
Mm. Well, Gerald, you aren't really afraid of a piece of glass, are you?
You don't believe Arthur's story at all, do you, Harvey?
On the contrary, Susan, I do believe it. But not the way you think.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean to say murder is not in the goblet. It's in me, in you, Even in Gerald.
Oh, what a silly thing to say, Harvey.
Oh, yes. You don't need a magic goblet to commit a murder. All you have to do is let yourself go. Let go of the civilized controls that tie you up. Why, Gerald, if you had cause, you could murder me or even your lovely wife.
Oh, I couldn't kill a fly.
Oh, but you could if the fly gave you enough trouble. Now, supposing, just as an example, supposing that you discovered that Susan was really in love with me and only married you for your money.
Harvey.
Wouldn't that make you want to murder her, Gerald?
Harvey, you're crazy.
That's not very funny, Harvey.
Even you, Susan.
What?
Even though you have a lovely face and exquisite hands, even you could commit murder. Why, there must have been times when you hated Gerald, or only for a moment, of course. But in that moment... In that moment, if you were not so civilized...
Stop it, Harvey.
Why, you could even put your lovely hands around my throat.
Oh, stop it, Harvey. You're not that important to her. And then just why are we on this gruesome subject?
That's Harvey's idea of humor.
Susan looked at me, a touch of red at the point where the cheekbones make the skin taut. She seemed angry, but she wasn't really. Oh, yes, she loved me. I could see it in her face. She looked at me for a moment and then dropped her eyes.
May I look at the goblet, Harvey?
No, I'm afraid not, Susan. You might accidentally drop it.
It might be a good idea.
Well, I have an even better one, Gerald. And that's to go home before we get really serious about this murder business.
I sat there staring at the goblet after they left. It fascinated me, glittering in the lamplight. And as I looked at it, it almost seemed as if the red spot of blood was moving, rolling down its side. Why shouldn't I drink from it? Why? And before I knew it, I'd taken it down and put it on the table. I got a bottle of burgundy, opened it, and I poured slowly, filling the goblet just up to the red spot. And then I drank from it. Seemed to me that the wine had a different taste, although I had drunk this wine often and knew its taste well. It was delicious. I had another. It was heady. And it made me a little dizzy, although I felt fine and free. Yes, light and dizzy. But after a while, when the dizziness wouldn't go away, I decided to go for a drive, even though it was close to midnight. I drove fast. The speed and power of the car gave me a feeling of great exhilaration. I took the turns at full speed, enjoying the danger of the sharp curves. Then I came to a long, level stretch of road. I pressed down hard on the gas. The needle of the speedometer slowly moved upward. 60, 70, 80, 85. The road, like a black ribbon, rolled up in front of me. And then I suddenly saw him, but it was too late. I struck him with my right fender. He never made a sound. The car swerved a little from the impact. My heart in my throat. I stopped. Then I backed up. Backed up to where the body was lying sprawled grotesquely on the edge of the road. One look was enough. He was dead. But no one had seen the accident. I stepped on the gas and drove off.
Death's goblet, and the man who drank from it, a corpse lying limp by the side of a lonely road, and a car speeding away as the clock strikes 12 for
murder at midnight.
Thank you.
Murder at Midnight. Harvey challenged the curse of the goblet and found it true. He had just killed a man after drinking from it. Let's listen to him as he continues the story of Death's Goblet.
I knew now that the story of the goblet wasn't a myth, and I also knew what I was going to do about it. The next night, I got Gerald to come to my house to do some work.
I can't make head or tail out of your cost estimates, Harvey.
Well, now, really, Gerald, it's very simple. Just concentrate.
Why can't you take care of it like a good fellow? I'm awfully tired.
Well, all right, let's stop for a couple of minutes. Have a drink.
What are you doing, Harvey? The goblet.
Why, you don't really believe that story of Arthur's, do you?
Well,
you're much too intelligent for that. Well, you only pretended in front of Susan, didn't you?
Well, I... yes. Had to pretend, you know, women.
Well, of course. And even if you did believe it, I have a feeling that... Basically, you're pretty reckless, aren't you?
Used to be pretty wild when I was a young fella. On a motorcycle once.
Yes, I know, yes. Well, let's drink up. Find me a victim, will you, Gerald?
Huh?
Well, you know, according to the legend, I've got to murder someone. Maybe even you.
Oh, Harvey the murderer.
Yes. very nice wine. How about another?
Right.
Well, here's to your lovely wife. And how about switching glasses?
Huh?
Well, you might as well get a kick out of it, too.
Well, okay. Here goes.
I watched the fool swagger as he drank down the wine. In an hour, when he was alone, he'd be shivering with fright at what he'd done.
Well, I did it.
You certainly did. By the way, Gerald.
Yes?
I checked Arthur's story about this goblet.
Yeah?
And it seems that he's right. Everyone who ever put his lips to this goblet has committed a murder.
You mean...
Well, of course, it's all coincidence, but... then again, who knows? All the next week, I kept reminding Gerald about his drinking from the goblet. I wasn't really trying to get him to kill, but it was amusing to see him get upset and uneasy. And I noticed he was getting a little bolder, particularly with Susan, and had developed a temper. And one night, just as I was about to retire...
Hello, is that you, Harvey?
Yes, Susan, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm just a little worried about Gerald. He usually gets home at about 6, and it's 11 o'clock now. Do you know where he might be?
Why, he's having dinner with his sister.
His sister?
Yes, a tall, dark girl. She was in the office today, and...
Harvey, Gerald has no sisters.
Oh, he hasn't?
No.
Oh, I guess I got him mixed up with someone else. Yes, it was Les Gordon who was meeting his sister. Yes, Gerald had some business to take care of over in Milford.
You're not very good at covering up, Harvey. I'm coming right over. Please wait up for me.
Good. Things are beginning to happen. It was becoming very interesting. Now, we'd see.
Harvey, I want you to tell me everything. I must know. Who is this girl?
Take it easy, Susan. Come, sit down.
Oh, never mind that. What about Gerald?
I don't know anything about Gerald's private life. And besides, you're not the one to talk.
What on earth do you mean?
You know perfectly well what I mean. You don't really care for Gerald. Actually, you're in love with me.
Harvey.
Well, you are, aren't you?
Maybe. Sometimes I think I am. Oh, but you're too cold-blooded. I'd never be sure I could trust you.
As a matter of fact, you'd like to get rid of Gerald.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm just putting your thoughts into words. You never really loved him, did you?
Oh, but Harvey...
And he's finally become unbearable, hasn't he?
Oh, Harvey, if you only knew...
Do you know that the last time Gerald was here, he drank out of that goblet of Arthur's? It's possible that he wants to get rid of you, too.
Stop it! Stop it, you hear?
Well, I'm just telling you what I think you ought to know.
Oh, you see, I left word at home that Gerald was to meet me here. And if he does come, well, we'll see.
We sat and waited, not talking much. Susan's face was pale and agitated. It was most exciting. Susan, with all her charm and embellishments, was really a fierce animal underneath. I could almost hear her rage seething.
Are you expecting anyone?
Just Gerald.
Well, let him in.
Oh, hello, Harvey. Susan, what's up? Why did you leave word to meet you here?
It's almost midnight. Where have you been all the evening?
At Milford.
With whom?
What's going on, anyway? What are you so excited about, Susan?
What were you doing in Milford?
Why, I went there on business.
Oh, really? You've been behaving very strangely lately, Gerald. If you don't love me, why don't you say so like a man?
What? This is all your fault, Harvey. You've been filling her head with poison.
I had nothing to do with this. I told her that you went to Milford.
All he did was to make me see clearly something I've felt for a long while. And I think this is the time to do something about it.
True, are you out of your mind? Put that gun down.
You remember it, don't you? You gave it to me. Said it might be useful in an emergency.
Harvey, take that gun away from her. She's liable to shoot.
She won't shoot. She's only trying to frighten you.
Am I? Let's see.
Oh, my shoulder. Give me that gun. Harvey. She's dead.
Yes, Gerald. And you killed her.
But it was an accident. She shot at me, and I was only trying to get the gun away from her. You know that's what happened.
I only know that you drank from that goblet and that you killed her.
What? But... Oh, you dirty treacherous. You planned all this so that you could get rid of me. So that you could have Susan. You could have the firm for yourself.
You'll have to do better than that to beat the gallows, Gerald.
The gallows? Please, Harvey. We've been friends for a long time. You can't let me down.
You wouldn't have pressed the trigger if you hadn't had murder in your heart, Gerald. You shot her because you wanted to. That's what I saw. I believe in telling the truth.
Harvey, I'll turn over the business to you. I'll do anything, if you'll just...
I don't accept bribes, Gerald.
All right. But I'll fool you. I'll call the police myself.
Well, there's the phone.
I'll prove my case in court. They won't convict me. Operator. Operator, give me the police. Hello? Police department? This is Gerald Hamilton. I just accidentally shot my wife and my friend's home. Yes, she's dead. The address is 411 Grove Street. That's right. I killed her. Accidentally. Yes. I'll be waiting here.
Cigarette, Gerald?
Oh, treating me like a condemned man, huh? Well, I'm not going to die. All I have to do is tell the truth about everything, including you.
Oh, but you forget, Gerald, there must be fingerprints, your fingerprints on that gun. That won't look very accidental, will it?
But Harvey...
You did it, Gerald. I saw you.
If you don't back me up, they'll hang me like a common criminal. Please, Harvey, don't let them do that to me, please.
Oh, stop whining, Gerald.
What? All right, Harvey, I'll stop. You're responsible for this whole thing. You know you are. And since they can only hang me once...
He raised the gun, but I'd been expecting it. I grabbed his hand, pushed it against his chest. My finger pressed on his hand on the trigger. And suddenly, he went limp.
You won't get away.
My alibi was perfect. All I had to do was wait for the police that he himself had called. Minutes ticked slowly away, and then...
Hello, Harvey.
Arthur.
Glad I found you in. Say, you look as if you'd been in a fight.
Arthur, you'd better not come in.
Why, what's the matter?
No, you'd better not come in.
Well, but why?
Well, Gerald and Susan, they had a quarrel, and he killed her.
What?
And then he shot himself.
What are you talking about, Harvey?
Well, all right, come in. Look for yourself.
Good Lord.
Well, tried to kill me, too.
But why? It doesn't sound like him or like either of them.
Well, I don't know why. Fit of insanity? Or maybe it was the goblet. Your goblet. He drank out of it, you know.
The goblet? Why, that's ridiculous.
As he spoke, he picked up the gun.
It made me furious. All those fine fingerprints of Gerald's were now erased. Put that gun down, Arthur. There are fingerprints on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
I tried to get hold of myself. The stupid fool, he was going to ruin everything. But I had to keep calm. What were you saying about the goblet?
Why, it has no curse or magic. I just made that story up.
You made it... You mean...
Of course, I bought the goblet in an antique shop. As a matter of fact, I have a whole set of them.
The pulses hammered away in my head. A vast, uncontrollable anger seized me. Was it because of those precious fingerprints that he'd wiped out, or because I had believed in the goblet myself? I don't know. I only know that I had to fight to keep from grabbing him by the throat.
You know, I don't think you're telling me everything you know about this horrible business, Harvey. In fact...
A red-hot wave came over me. I don't remember exactly what happened.
Let me go! Get your hands off me!
Arthur's body is lying there, too, now. Next to Susan's and Gerald's. But the police will be here any minute, so I have to hurry. First, the goblet. There. That's done. No. Some of the broken fragments still glitter in the lamplight. I've got to crush them. Grind them to powder under my heel. But there are always other pieces that I can't find. They're hiding from me. They're afraid of me. But I'll find every piece. I'll find them.
Three bodies lying huddled on the floor, and the madman crushing the fragments of the broken goblet to powder. As the police car drives up and the clock strikes 12 for
murder at midnight. Again, when death appears at the door, wearing the face of a friend, and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight.
The part of Harvey was played by Eric Dressler. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
Going to do it for the Relic Radio show for this week. I'll be back tomorrow with more old time radio. RelicRadio.com has this show, all the shows listed there, past episodes from them, links to the forum, the Shoutcast stream, and everything else Relic Radio. You can email me at RelicRadio@gmail.com. Follow this show and all the shows on Twitter at twitter.com/RelicRadio. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Tuesday with a brand new episode of the Relic Radio show.